I chose this passage because of its importance in pointing out Gunnar's more literal transformation from the Southern California skater to the inner city LA street smart gangster. Starting with this poem, this section combines Gunnar's interests in the worlds he's become accustomed to, the predominantly white Santa Monica and the minority-populated majority of Los Angeles. The title of his poem is interesting, as it seems to have two names, one that applies to the old world of Southern California, and the other that applies to the new world, L.A. The poem describes the street life he encounters daily in L.A., while the allusions to Greek mythology, symbolic of his interests in Santa Monica, are woven into the poem as well. He says in the first stanza that he is searching for ghetto muses, and proceeds to take most of the Greek muses and put them into a ghetto context. In this sense, I think Gunnar can relate to them. They serve as a sort of metaphor for himself. He, coming from a classic reading white surfer community, was picked up and dropped in the polar opposite street life community. He feels as though his family's move was like taking the Greek muses and placing them in the heart of Los Angeles, where they stick out like a sore thumb. Cleo, the muse of heroic poetry and history, is mentioned in the same stanza where Gunnar talks about dangerous drug dealers hanging outside a 7-Eleven convenience store. Although Gunnar had seemed content in his white bread lifestyle in Southern California, this poem gives such places as the San Fernando Valley, another predominantly white area, a negative connotation. He speaks of Calliope, the muse of epic poetry, moving to the valley as a typical and undignified event. More importantly, he says that she emigrated to the valley, suggesting that she was not from that area, but from a completely different culture. This is reflective of his family's move from the country to the city, and extremely critical on that note. Thalia, being the music of comedy, is depicted as floating by in the LA River, getting stuck in a rusted shopping cart. Despite this event being comical, it also is reflective of Gunnar's feeling seriously lost at sea in LA. He places Euterpe, the muse of music, in the ghetto scenery of a church basement talent show, and then situates Melpomene, the muse of tragedy, reading obituaries and dwelling on the black tragedies in the LA ghetto. Interestingly, however, by the last stanza, Gunnar makes no mention of the muses, but instead employs only street slang he's picked up and symbolically moves away from his tie to the old world of Santa Monica. The entire poem, up until the last stanza, uses a combination of classic invocation of the muses and Gunnar's adoption of slang. Gunnar uses the slang to make his poem acceptable among the streets, while still remaining true to his own love of classic poetry. The poem serves as a public statement of his movement into the black culture as he paints it for everyone to see on the infamous wall behind his house. The poem flows right into the scene where Nick Scobie comes to take Gunnar out to buy his basketball gear, which will transform Gunnar's appearance from seaside bumpkin to basketball extraordinaire. Before setting out to buy his new look, however, Scobie gives him an important street lesson. Scobie tells Gunnar that in meeting his neighbor, Psycho Logo, the night before, he has unwillingly and unknowingly become involved. Involved in the very same gang that had beaten him to a bloody pulp. The gang he had taken a beating from in hopes of acceptance. When he met Psycho Loco, he was given the secret password and taught the soul shake without even knowing it. His friends were chosen for him, and he had become involved in the gang without being asked twice. Scobie tells him there is no turning back at this point, so he might as well get used to it. Buying new sneakers was much more important to basketball than they were in skateboarding, as Gunnar would come to realize. For skateboarding, there was a limited amount of styles of sneakers to choose from. But as Gunnar entered Tenny's from heaven, he was dumbfounded at the infinite selection that awaited him. The main room was filled with numerous styles of shoes, but as Scobie quickly taught him, these were all out of the question. Gunnar's description of the store pokes fun at the ridiculousness and hierarchy of sneakers. The only real shoes to choose from were in the section called the Proving Grounds, partitioned by sliding glass doors. Here he would hopefully find the shoes that would prove himself to the other gangs he would battle on the basketball courts. before trying these technologically advanced sneakers on, Gunner had to sign a form admitting that if his sneakers were stolen, he wouldn't blame the company. The absurdity of the store's setup and policies are an exaggeration of the importance of a pair of sneakers to basketball. The whole scene serves as a means of making fun of the idea that someone's shoes could really represent their skill. In skateboarding, the main concern was the talent possessed, but in basketball, you'd rather lose and look good than to win and look bad. Basketball is not just about the sport, but was also about the look, the sneakers, the starched white tee, and the sun-kissed special. In having Nick escort him around to buy new sneakers, iron new t-shirts, fold his jeans just right, and get the right shape up, he was changing Gunner's image and transforming him into the LA street kid. This passage is important to the rest of the novel in the sense that it is the first glimpse we see of Gunner breaking ties with Santa Monica and his Vans sneakers and fully transforming into the city kid he inevitably must become, Adidas basketball sneakers and all. I pinpointed Gunner's conversion to this section because it symbolically and physically exhibited his transformation. With the help of Scobie and Psycho Loco in this passage, Gunner appears to be set on a one-way street to inner-city basketball stardom and total immersion in the black culture of Los Angeles.